at 8:45, so should we begin? Is the official, is the recording on? Okay. Is the recording on? We're ready to begin.
Okay, you ready to begin?
We are ready.
Very good, you're on.
Okay, the curtain rises. All right, we're ready for another exciting season of From the Dayan's Desk. And I want to pick up where we left off. We were talking about employer-employee situations. When is an employee allowed to suddenly terminate the employment? Do they have to give notice? Is there ever a time in which an employee is compelled to finish their contract and they're not allowed to leave in the middle? And right now, we are turning a little bit to the employer side of the equation. We spoke a little bit about this towards the end of last year's month. And this is very much the bread and butter of many of the cases that come in front of Beis Din. These are cases that involve what I call employment termination disputes. It's very common that when there's been a falling out between an employer and employee, employer fires the employee, that the case ends up being submitted to Beis Din for adjudication. And there are all kinds of different claims that can be presented in the context of this type of adjudication. And I want to go through them, and I want to discuss exactly what are the considerations, what are the sources, what are the positions, what are the shitos, how is it that Beis Din typically handles these types of cases. So just as a starting point, in the discussion, I'll mention that it's always a good idea, like when Yaakov entered into a contractual arrangement with Laban, to try to spell things out as much as possible, because often a lot of these disputes arise when there are misunderstandings, miscommunications, and perhaps unfulfilled expectations that the parties did not sufficiently discuss at the outset of their arrangement with each other. So even though it didn't work out so perfectly for Yaakov, you know, when he said, but nonetheless, we know that this is always a prescribed and recommended route, that you should try to spell things out. And this is in terms of what's the term of employment, what are the expectations of what an employee is supposed to do, is there an implicit understanding that at the end of the first term of employment the contract will be automatically renewed, or is it understood that there should be no such expectation or assumption? Is there an arrangement where the employee is viewed as an employee at will, where they can just be terminated any time without any notice and without any reason? Or is there more of an expectation that there needs to be termination for cause, and that if there is no cause for termination and the employee just wakes up one morning and decides, I don't want this employee anymore, then that's not going to be sufficient. Is there an expectation of severance, that after working for a certain period of time, the employee is going to be paid a certain goodbye present for having served at their term? Sometimes you might have an employee who goes in and has an expectation, yeah, well, of course, whenever the termination runs out, there's going to be severance, and the employer never heard of such a thing, and assumes that, of course, there's not going to be any severance if it's not explicitly stated in the contract. All of this has to be spelled out. The more that these things are made clear, the better it is. Is it a type of position where there's an expectation of tenure after a certain amount of time? Like, for example, you're a professor in a college, and after a certain number of years, there are, in many institutions, there's a process through which a professor can receive tenure, in which case they have more of an assurance or more of a security in their position being sustained and continued, where the threshold for the type of malfeasance or misbehavior or misconduct that could lead to the termination of the position is a much higher threshold once they have that tenure stature. So all of these things are sometimes in the heads of the people when they enter into a contract, but in many situations are not spelled out explicitly in the contract itself. So one thing that I have discovered is that the more that you have all of the different terms and conditions spelled out explicitly and thoroughly and comprehensively in the contract, so the more the potential for disputes and misunderstandings and roaring battles in Beis Din are diminished. And it's always good to try to diminish the potential for disputes as much as possible. Now, that being said as well, it's important to understand from a halakhic perspective what are the parameters of being allowed to terminate an employee altogether. I've been an employee. All of us are employees in our various positions. I've also been an employer where I've hired people. I remember that when I was at the Beis Din of America, every single year, when I would hire interns, I would meet with them, and I would have excellent relationships with, 99% of the interns whom we had at the Beis Din, but I would spell out the things that were really important to me. It was important, for example, that you show up on time. Say, that you don't have to be perfect in your work or your knowledge or everything else, anything else. It's a learning process. But you don't show up, that's going to be grounds for termination. Or the thing that I cared about the most was the integrity of the organization, that there shouldn't be a letter that would go out with some sort of a halakhic judgment. Sometimes I would have the interns compile information about a Jewish status certificate, where somebody wanted a certificate that would confirm that they are halakhically Jewish or that they are halakhically allowed to marry. So they could do a lot of the legwork in compiling the data and the documents and interviewing people and so forth, but I needed to review it. So I said, if you send out a certification, you sign a certification, you send it out without having it reviewed and approved by me, so that's immediate grounds for termination. So I would understand what I really cared about. And the more you spell out upfront what you really care about, the more you're likely to have compliance with respect to those conditions, and in the event that you don't have compliance, there will be less of an ability for the people to complain against you or bring a grievance that you fired them for unjust cause. So basically, the types of causes of action that come in front of Beis Din when it comes to matters of termination can be divided into four different categories, and that's what I have in these handout sheets today. The first is, does an employer have a right to termination without cause? Meaning that, let's say that there is a contract where you hire somebody and there's no definite time to the duration of the contract. So does that mean that you are just hiring a person forever? You hire somebody, they're going to be a factory worker. You hire somebody to be a teacher. You hire somebody to be a custodian. You hire a person for any number of different potential positions. Do we say that if there is no time frame, then it's just understood? As long as there's work to be done, the person is hired forever unless they mess up. So that's a very important question, halakhically. Let's say that you spell out that the contract is only going to be for 1 year. So everybody agrees that within that 1 year, there is some sort of a minhag medina, or there is an explicit stipulation that it's an employee at will situation where you can terminate the employment at any time. Everyone would be in basic agreement that within that time frame of the contract, you generally are not allowed to fire somebody without cause. But let's say the 1 year comes to a conclusion, and now you're beginning the second year. So can you just turn to the person and say, well, we've decided to go in a different direction, or, whatever terminology you use, or you just put a note in their mailbox saying, I'm sorry, but we're not renewing the contract for a second year. Is that sufficient? Or do we have to say, no, if the person didn't mess up, they didn't to commit any malfeasance, they didn't commit any wrongdoing, then you're stuck with this guy forever. You're stuck with this employee forever. So that's a very, very important first threshold issue. Second question is there an obligation to pay severance, as we were discussing? Do we say that if the contract does not stipulate that the employer is going to pay severance, nonetheless it's understood as a matter of Jewish law, that of course the employer has to pay severance? This is a very, very hot issue, and you should know that many of the cases that are brought in the front of Beis Din focus upon this issue of the employee insisting that, of course, even if it's not spelled out in the contract, there's an implied right and expectation under Jewish law that you're always going to receive severance, just like in Eretz Yisrael, it's codified in the statute, both for religious positions and for secular positions, that if you work in the capacity for any number of years, you're entitled to a Chodesh Lashana, you're entitled to a month's salary for every single year that you work. We don't have that as a statutory matter in the United States, but do you say that that applies at the very least to religious institutions or to any employment situation between two Jewish parties? Do we say that that automatically kicks in? So that's a second course of action that we get all the time. Because if you're having a course of action, remember, when somebody gets fired, so they are in the most likely position to bring a din Torah for the simple reason that they need the money. Because if they're fired, they're not getting a salary anymore, especially if they didn't find another job. So therefore, they have to find some sort of source for money. So that is a very strong motivation. If you have a doubt one way or another, should I bring action, should I not? Should I just come up with courses of action, even if they might not be successful? So a person needs funds. So that's a strong motivation. An employer who fires an employee needs to understand that they need to protect themselves even more than, you know, in other situations in life against the possibility of litigation for that reason alone. Third consideration is, was there sufficient notice given? Is there a notice requirement? An employer comes to the conclusion that they don't want to renew a contract, and maybe they can justify, according to Jewish law, not renewing a contract. Or maybe they come to the determination that there is sufficient cause that they should terminate somebody. What kind of notice are they required to give? Do we say that if, and normally, the employment season begins September 1st, and they've decided and they give notice on August 30th to somebody that they're not renewing their employment, that maybe they should be penalized for not giving the employee sufficient time to find another position, because they're more likely to find another position if they were told in March that their employment is ending at the end of August than if they're told at the end of August that their employment is ending at the end of August. So that's, and sometimes, by the way, the courses of action that are brought to Beis Din will be all of the above. Somebody will say, number one, you have no right to terminate me because there was no cause, and you can't terminate if there's no cause. Number two, you didn't give me sufficient notice. And number three, I want my severance. Okay, this is Maisim B'Kol Yom, I got to tell you. These are the types of cases that come into the Beis Din. They're probably even more prevalent than, you know, the Hasagas Bul competing pizza parlor case, which is, you know, also, I would say, your standard cookie-cutter Beis Din case. This is probably an even more common type of scenario. And finally, number four, let's say that the determination is that there couldn't be termination unless that there really was cause, or that they needed greater notice, except for the fact that there was cause. Another rip-roaring type of dispute that often erupts is, was there cause or not? And sometimes you can have a dispute. Is the type of misbehavior or the type of malfeasance that is being claimed by the employer sufficient as a halakhic matter to constitute cause? And again, this also relates to severance, because a lot of the poskim might say, well, it's appropriate to give severance when you fire somebody or you don't renew their contract and they didn't do anything wrong. But if they did do something wrong, so then you can be exempted from having to pay severance. So therefore, this last course of action really stands alone, but it is also tied into all of the other courses of action as well.
Is there no distinction between levels of cause?
Absolutely. There could be distinction between levels, of course. You could say there's a certain type of cause, which in fact this is something which the leaders of Torah Misora, I believe, are quoted as having said. I'm not putting words in their mouth. But that, for example, they have a certain severance policy. If you work as an educator for Torah Misora, that you're entitled to Chodesh Lashana. That's something that they seem to have adopted, okay? In cases certainly where a teacher is fired, and even in certain cases where a teacher retires when they're 65 years old, or they work for 35 years and they're not assuming another job. So they say that, well, if somebody is terminated for a cause because they just were not professionally discharging their duties in sufficient fashion, so they might still give Chodesh Lashana. If they're terminated because they did something really, really bad in terms of like abusive behavior towards students or something like that, so that's a level of cause which is so severe that you would forfeit your 7. So there as well, yes, there could be different layers of cause. And are there types of causes which we say would be unjust discrimination? Like if the cause is we decided that we're going to terminate you because you're too old, okay? Because you're age discrimination. Do we say that if somebody's terminated because of age, that maybe that's not considered to be proper cause? What constitutes proper cause and what doesn't? Okay, so let's get started over here with the first area of discussion, the first cause of action. Number one, does an employee have a right to terminate an employee without cause, period? Is there such a right? Again, assuming that either it's an open-ended contract, or let's say it was a one-year contract, and the 1 year has come to an end, and they just don't want to renew the contract, all right? Let's say, your very, very simple case. So here, just what is important to know is that there's really just one position out there, one very well-known authority, who's of the opinion that you never have the right to terminate without cause. Once you hire somebody, you are stuck with them forever. As long as the work is still needs to be done, as long as the organization still exists, you're stuck with the employee forever. So you better be really, really careful who you hire. And the proponent of that position is Rav Moshe Feinstein. So Rav Moshe Feinstein is not a... a small potato in this stratosphere. So if he says something, you have to take it seriously. So we know that if somebody brings a cause of action in Beis Din for wrongful termination, especially if they have a tohen, especially if they have a rabbinic advocate, the first words out of the mouth of the rabbinic advocate are going to be, but Moshe Feinstein says that you had no right to fire the person because you can't fire without cause. So the question is, where does this position of Moshe come from? And why do people disagree? Because there are the Chazon Ish in particular, and others disagree with this position of Rav Moshe Feinstein. And every single Beis Din has to make a determination. Do you follow Rav Moshe, or do you follow the other positions?
Now, what he says is you can't fire without cause. Does that include a situation in which a contract is set up for a specific period of time and it's only for that period of time? And
yes.
That's explicit.
Yes. Even if the contract is for that period of time, unless the job expires. Like,
that's
there was a job that the person is, you hire someone to paint your house.
Yes.
So we're not talking about a painter of the house. That's okay. A cobbler. That's, once the job is finished, so the contract is finished. We're talking about when you're hiring a salaried employee in an organization. You have an organization. The organization will continue to have the work to be done. You hire a secretary. You'll always need a secretary in the organization. Secretarial work will continue to need to be done. And the person is prepared to continue to do that work.
But if the organization, for example, only has a budget for 1 year, and therefore they stipulate that this is going to be only a one-year contract.
If the work is not needed beyond 1 year, and there's nobody else who's going to be hired to replace that position, so then you're right. That could be a different story. Okay? But Moshe does say explicitly it's only for as long as there still is a need for the position. But don't you think it's a good idea to look at some of the sources? I would feel like I'm robbing you if I'm just like speaking on the outside without giving you any of the sources at all. We haven't even begun.
But so let's
read a few of the sources.
There's no budget for it. They have money 1 year, they have money second year.
If there's no budget for it, Ramosh just talks about that explicitly. We're going to see. He talks about that question very, very explicitly. By the time we get through with the sources, as we go through the sources, you'll see it will address many, many of the questions that you have, but then there still are residual questions. You should definitely ask them. So I'm not discouraging the questions. I just think it would be good to take a look. So the Gemara in Baba Basra and Daf Kof Aleph Amud Beis quotes Rava is saying that there are certain positions where if they mess up, it's going to cause such detrimental loss to the community, to the people that they're serving, that they don't even have to be warned before they are terminated. As soon as they commit their foul, as soon as they mess up, they can be automatically terminated because of the tremendous loss that they are causing. Mikra Yanuka, for example, Torah school teachers, because they have to be able to transmit The Torah very clearly and carefully to the children if they're not doing their job, their emunah, properly and effectively, so the children are wasting the time, the children are learning Torah improperly, and that's very difficult to undo. So if they're not doing a good job, you can terminate them immediately. Shisla, you have a gardener. I mean, come on, I don't need to explain the importance of having good landscaping. Tipka, if you have you have a butcher. Umna, you have a bloodletter, like a doctor, basically. Vesof and Masa, the person is the scrivener, he's writing the documents for people in the town. They're all considered to be the equivalent of forewarned. Klaladin, therefore, if they mess up, they could be terminated immediately. Whenever there is a tremendous loss that the people have caused, they're considered to be forewarned, and you can get rid of them. Okay? So now there are three questions that arise from just reading this basic passage in the Gemara. Number one, is the Gemara telling us that just like in these cases, when can you terminate them? When there's a pseudo de lohada, when they did something which caused irreparable damage, right? So does that mean that whenever you terminate anybody, it's only if they've caused irreparable damage? It's only if it's for cause. That's question number one. Do I derive that from the Gemara? Number two, is it that, no, maybe that's not what I'm supposed to derive from this Gemara, but just that when it comes to other people, there's a need that before you fire them, before you fire somebody, you have to warn them. And then, but when it comes to these specific positions, these positions are so important in terms of the community that when it comes to these positions, you don't even have to warn them before you fire them. But other people you have to warn, but it's not necessarily focusing on whether you can only fire for cause or not for cause, but just the focus of the Gemara is, do I need to warn people before I fire them? Do I not need to give them notice before I fire them? Okay? A third possible way of reading the Gemara is that maybe the Gemara is saying that I really am only allowed to fire for cause, but that's only with respect to people who have been given public positions of responsibility. They're the Torah teacher. Oh, they're the official scribe for the city. They're the official doctor for the city. They're the gardener for the city. If they have, a major important public position, and the Mefarshim explain, the Be'er Aglah, the Vilna Gaon, and Siman Nun Gimel, and Orach Chaim, and Shulchan Aruch, and others explain that the reason for the special status of public positions might be that because they're so public, if you get rid of them, it's going to cause kshat. People will think, oh, there's something very, very wrong with these individuals. They did something really corrupt. They did something really scandalous. Because, it's like newspaper news, like Shabbos table news, that this person was removed from their position. So therefore, you can't just remove them without cause, because people will assume that if the person was terminated, there must have been cause. So therefore, you cannot remove these positions without cause. But if they weren't positions of public authority, then you would be allowed to fire people without cause, okay? Or I could say that maybe because it's a public position, and this is the explanation the Ibn Azal and the Rambam gives, if it's a public position, so then maybe there's a different consideration that the community, when the community hires somebody, you hire a rabbi, you hire a landscaper, you hire a scribe, you hire a doctor, you hire a butcher for the community, so a community and community officials are always supposed to act in a fashion of lifnim mishuras hadin. They're always supposed to go above and beyond the letter of the law. So yes, normally if you're dealing with a private employee and a private employee, so you can terminate even without cause. But if it's a public position, either because of the possibility of kshad, or because you have to act with Nimishura Sadin, so only in these situations do we require that it be upsede de lo hada. Okay? So those are sort of like the opening question marks. So we don't know where to place the accent, where to place the emphasis in this Gemara of exactly what's the point that we're supposed to derive. Okay? So maybe we'll get further elucidation from the second passage. The second passage is Gemara Baba Messiah, Dab Kuftes, beginning Amun Av, goes on to Amun Beis, and it tells the story of Runya, okay? Runya was causing the ruin of Ravina. Runya was the Shasla, he was the gardener for Ravina, and he was doing a ruinous job. Hover upseed, so he caused damage, he caused a loss, okay? Sulke, and therefore, Ravina said, I can't take it anymore. You're ruining all of my plants, and you're ruining all of my azaleas, and I gotta fire you. So Amalei, Kazimar, Micah, Ovenly, what are you doing to me? So so Runya complained to Rava, look what Ravina did to me. So Amalei, Shafi, Ovid, so Rava said that what Ravina did was perfectly proper. So Amalei, Lohel, Lohalo, Hisrabi. But he didn't even give me warning. So Amalei, he didn't have to give you warning. And Rava, who paskin that Ravina had the right to terminate Runya without warning, was Lataimen, was according to his general position, to Amarava, Mikri Dadak, he's just the typical Rumna Safa Masa, the Gemara that we quote in Baba Basra, Kulanki Musarma Omni Dami, you have a position of serious responsibility, you are considered to be forewarned. Follow the Milsak of Sedal Hadaki Musarma Omni Dami. What does this Gemara contribute that the previous Gemara did not tell us? Well, one thing that I might be able to derive from this Gemara is, what was Runya? It sounds like Runya was just privately employed by Ravina. And despite the fact that it was a private employment situation, we still are applying the same categories. We still seem to be saying that either the emphasis is that Ravina was only able to get rid of him because it was upset at the Lohadar, right? Because it was an irreparable loss, but otherwise he couldn't have terminated him without cause. Or maybe the emphasis is that he was allowed to terminate him even without a warning. And the emphasis is not on cause, but rather on whether or not you have a notice requirement. So Moshe, yes?
The employee is a Jew?
We're assuming everybody here is Jewish. Everybody, because this is Jewish law, everybody is bound by Jewish law.
It doesn't apply to a non-Jewish
employee. Well, again, if we were dealing with a non-Jewish employee, then arguably the legal system that would be applicable to him would be whatever would be the local secular law. So whatever the local secular law would be, that would be applicable. But that does raise an interesting question. Do we say if there's a clear minog, if there's a clear custom that has been established by the locality where they live, even though it's a secular country, it's a secular town, do we say that if the minog in their locale is that people can be terminated without cause, even if halakhically speaking, that's not something that we would have allowed, that we should say, well, when it comes to employment situations, we always follow whatever is the custom of the land, and therefore we should follow the custom of the land as well. So that is an interesting question. That's a question that Ramosha Feinstein grapples with. So Ramosha in this tshuva, he has a series of tshuvas, but sort of the main foundational tshuva is in Chelek Alpha Kosha Mishpat Simenai and Hei. He has subsequent tshuvas in which he alludes back to this tshuva. He takes sort of the most extreme reading of the Gemara, namely the first possibility that what the Gemara in Baba Basra is telling us, and this is also being reinforced by the Gemara in Baba Metzia that we just read about Runya, is that as a normal default proposition, you're never allowed to fire any employee unless you have cause. Unless you have cause. It has to be stated to the other. It has to be cause. If you don't have cause, you cannot fire somebody. So this is the question that he deals with. And before he gets to these Gemaras to bring a proof, he brings a proof from a totally separate machlokas, disagreement between Mishonim from absolutely left field, and everybody looks at this and they say, well, this is from absolutely left field, so we don't know how to deal with this. Only Rav Moshe would do that, would like, you know, find some sort of a sugya that you would not think has anything whatsoever to do with this particular question, and he would make that the focal point of his tshuva, because Rav Moshe had, you know, kol haTorah kulah in front of him, you know, at all moments in time. So whenever anybody else, subsequent to Rav Moshe, discusses this sugya and this question, and they bring the proofs of Rav Moshe, they completely gloss over this preliminary discussion of Rav Moshe, even though this is a tshuva that goes on for maybe 10 pages, and the first 8 pages really focuses on this other totally different sugya that Rav Moshe seizes upon. So pretty much everyone after Rav Moshe chose to completely ignore that 100%. But because this was really important to Rav Moshe, he spent 8 pages on it, and I feel that we should spend at least like a couple of minutes on it. So Rav Moshe alludes to a sugya. There's a machlokas based on a Gemara in Gittin. It's a Mishnah and a Gemara in Gittin. What does Gittin have to do with employment? Nothing, right? Well, it might have some connection in the following sense. A man divorces his wife, and he says, I'm giving you this get on condition. We don't do this anymore. We don't give gittin on conditions because that would create a lot of confusion. Was the condition fulfilled? Was it not fulfilled? Was it articulated properly the way the condition is supposed to be articulated? Was it not articulated properly? So we just have done away entirely with this idea of giving a get on condition. But strictly speaking, according to the Dina de Gemara, you can give a get on condition. So the man says, this is your get, amenas, on condition that you're going to nurse my baby. Maybe it was her baby too. But he says, I'm giving this get on condition that you nurse my baby. So there's a machlokis, how long does she have to nurse the baby for? Let's say that he didn't say for how long. He didn't say for 2 years. He just said, I want him, because the normal nursing period is for 2 years. Because I want you to nurse my baby. So there's a machlokis between Rava and Ravashi. Rava says, if he says, I want you to nurse my baby, so it's understood for as long as the baby needs to be nursed. How long does the baby need to be nursed? For 2 years. So until the baby turns 2 years old, right? So at that point in time, until then, she would have to nurse the baby in order for it to be a valid get. Ravashi says, nah, it means like one day she should nurse the baby. Because he didn't specify for how long, so therefore, as long as she does it once, so she's fulfilled the condition. That's the machlokas. So the Rashba says, well, according to Rava, who says that when he just says to his wife that I'm giving you the get on condition you nurse the baby, and then it has to be for the full 2 years. So if a person took upon themselves that they're going to sustain another individual, they take upon themselves the hiskaivus. I'm going to support you. I'm going to support you. Okay? And we make a kinyan that I'm going to support you. How long do I have to support you for? How long do I need to support you for? For as long as you need support. Basically, forever. Forever. That's it. Rashba says there's an obligation. The person who took upon himself this hiskaivus, he has to support forever. The Rush disagrees.
Based on this Gemara
and Gittin. And Gittin daf ayin vav. And the Rush disagrees. And the Rush says just like with respect to the nursing situation, we take a minimalist approach. So here too as well, we would take a minimalist approach for the shortest possible time. It could even be for 1 day. So, says Ramosha. So it could be that this question, when you hire somebody, how long are you hiring them for if you didn't, specify otherwise? So that would be dependent upon this machlokas. According to the Rashba, that when you undertake to support somebody, you undertake to support them forever. You undertake to hire someone as an employee. You're supporting them, giving them a salary. It's supposed to be forever. And according to the Rashba, no, it doesn't mean forever. It just means for, whatever is the shortest possible acceptable time period that it would be expected that an employment term would last. But then says Ramosha, and this is the ellipsis, three dots, right, in the middle, about Aphinius Daiti, he says, but I don't think that there's the machlokas in this case. In this case, everybody would agree. The Rashba, the Rosh, everybody would agree in this particular case that you hire an employee, it means forever. About Aphinius Daiti, right, Aphinius Daiti, ain't shayach, machlokusam, it's only when a person has accepted to sustain and support somebody. They're just saying, this person didn't do anything for me. I'm just agreeing. I'm going to support them. So maybe, according to one opinion, didn't intend that he's going to support this person forever and ever. Since he didn't say it's forever, so why should we assume it's forever? But when it comes to hiring a worker, it's not just some sort of an obligation that is just randomly being taken upon the person for no particular reason. But rather, it's because he really needs this worker. In other words, I'm not just as a charitable matter obligating myself to support this person indefinitely, in which case I'll say that maybe it's circumscribed to a particular point in time. But rather, what am I doing? I'm saying that this is a tit for tat. It's a tit for tat. That I need this person to work for me, and therefore I'm going to give them something in return. So therefore, by the Yishlan Alom, so then obviously it makes sense to say that I'm hiring the person for as long as my business is going to be open, and I will have a need for this work and this position to be filled. She's starak l'parim, d'hubuhubda didami olam, which is going to be forever, or as long as the person has his factory, as long as the person has his office. Kozman shel histam aperish durak l'zman kotzer, as long as it has not been specifically enunciated that it's only going to be for a short period. So there's one out though. According to Rav Moshe now, we're at this point in the tshuva, so I would be able to distinguish between at least two cases, where I hired a person without stipulating a term, in which case that would be a really dumb thing to do, according to Rav Moshe, which per case I'm stuck with the person forever, or, and the case where I said that I'm hiring you for a specific time period, for January, or for the academic year of 2017 to 2018. Where I give a specific time period, so then according to Rav Moshe, it sounds like at least then I would be able to protect myself. But he's not done yet. He's not done yet because he's going to take away that loophole by the time that we're done. Okay? So then Rav Moshe brings the other proof. The other proof is the one that we would have expected him to bring in the first place. But that's why he's Rav Moshe and we're not. So he brings a second proof just to show that even though we're not Rav Moshe, we count for something. So therefore, since we've done these other Gemaras, so he will give us at least the kindness of indicating that this will be included in the equation as well. The Raya Mehadi Hutzrach Rav and Mimikri Dariki says a proof from the fact that Rav said in all of these cases, the teacher, the gardener, and the butcher, and the umna, and the safa masa, meaning the salkam davka v'efsidu, that the Gemara says you can only get rid of them when they have caused loss. Shufseda de lo hunter, ababoloze, en yachol on the salkam. So that's the way the Rav Moshe is reading the Gemara, that if not for the fact that they caused a permanent loss, you would not be able to get rid of them. So he says, ve'elam adayri davka v'shel kol b'nei masa, don't say that, like the third possible way that we were going to learn that Gemara, that it's only dealing with public positions, right? Because of the shad, because of the obligation of Pnim Mishra Sadin, that you have to have cause. That Runya, Hayarakshus of the Ravina, Rav Rishonim, because Runya was a private gardener of Ravina. According to the way most of the Rishonim run, he was a private gardener, and yet nonetheless, Ravina was only allowed to fire him based on cause. And Komokam, Laya, Yachal, Salko, below time, they've said, and he brings, in fact, a raya from the Rambam, Hilchos Chiras, where the Rambam says that actually the emphasis is almost in the opposite direction. And if I'm dealing with a private person, so then not only do I require cause, but I require cause plus hasra, plus the person deserves notice, as opposed to a public position where the loss is so great for the community. So the chiddush there is that I don't require notice, but of course I would require cause. V'dochek litchos, and he says that it will be very difficult to try to refute me on the basis that Ivy Bekibul Lizman, that maybe the wrongdoing or the failure on the part of the worker was only in the middle of the time period for which they were hired. Says there's one way you could get out of this argument and say that, well, there's a distinction between when a person is hired for, let's say, a 5-month period, and within those 5 months, the person messed up. So then, you could only allow to fire them within the 5 months if they messed up. But if they didn't mess up, since you hire them for 5 months, you couldn't get rid of them. But at least after the 5 months, you could get rid of them, right? Or if you hire somebody indefinitely, so then you could maybe argue that, well, it's not within any specific time period that you promised they'd always be able to work, so therefore you should be able to get rid of them. He said, no, because that distinction is not found in the Gemara, and it's not found in the poskim at all. But rather, there must be an expectation that they are hired forever. And therefore, he says that this is our starting point. That whenever you just hire somebody, you're never allowed to get rid of them, period. And it's not based on there being a minute you can't get rid of them. That's just sort of the expectation that you can't get rid of them. Okay, so that's what Moshe's position. That's his starting point, okay? Starting point of Moshe's position is that you hire somebody and that there is no specification that the employment terminates at a particular point in time, so you're stuck with them forever, okay? So then we're going to get back to Rav Moshe in a little bit. Now, Rav Moshe, yes?
According to Rav Moshe, you can find an upgraded employee. Is that a hefsid?
What do you mean by that? upgraded employee? What do you mean?
So let's say it's a warehouse employee.
Oh,
that can make 50 products an hour. You can get someone who can do 200 an hour. So you're losing. He's doing an okay job at 50, but you can.
But Moshe's saying that the person has to actually commit to some type of of a misconduct, or has to show that they are not discharging the job responsibly or effectively. So they have to actually do something which is less than what they were hired to do. So you hire them to discharge the job in a particular fashion, and they're falling short of whatever the stipulated expectations were. Now, what you're saying would be true, for example, let's say that I had the school teacher situation where the Gemara does talk about that I found a better school teacher. So there is a notion that we want to motivate the people to do as good a job as possible and to feel like maybe they could lose their position if you find somebody who's better than them. That's if it's sort of in the Avodas HaKodesh sphere. It's not clear whether we would apply that outside of the case of the school teacher. But yes, we do have that concept in the case of the school teacher at the very least. The question is, there's an Aruch HaShulchan who says in the school teacher case, you find somebody who's better, you can even terminate the person in the middle of their employment contract. But there's a Tshuva Sarash that says that you're not allowed to. So they distinguish between whether it's in the middle of the contract or whether it's after the term of the contract. But there, I think that Rav Moshe would have to agree that if it was after the official term of the contract, that you would be allowed to hire somebody who is better. But not in the middle of the term of the contract. Everybody would agree that would not constitute, not everybody, outside the Aruch HaShulchan, the general consensus is that if it's within the middle of whatever the term of the contract is, you wouldn't be allowed to terminate the position in favor of somebody who's better.
And can the production bar be changed after the first contract? I hired you to produce 50, but now I see other employees have the ability to do 100.
Maybe you can make that argument, yes. Especially if it is for a specific term. We'll see that when we get to the continuation of Rav Moshe, where he talks about, you know, what if there is a stipulation for a specific period of time, how does that change the equation? Okay? Yes.
You can answer this later, but what if the business isn't doing well?
If the business isn't doing well and you have to make cuts because of the budget, because of the financial health of the business, so then Rav Moshe says that falls into a totally different category. What's that category? Let's say that I hire somebody to wash my fields, okay? I mean, to water my fields, irrigate my fields, and then there's like terrible flooding, and it turns out that I don't need the watering of my fields altogether. I'm allowed to cancel that contract because that's an onus. Then I am under duress because circumstances beyond my control have required me to cancel the contract altogether. It's not as if I'm going to fire this person, I'm going to hire somebody else. I just don't need the work anymore. So then Rav Moshe says, there's no question under those circumstances you don't have to hire a contract. You don't have to honor a contract. However, then he says, it's a different question, which is that let's say I have 10 employees, and it turns out because of the financial situation of my business, I have to get rid of 5 of them. So then there's a question, how do I decide which 5 to fire? Do I say that it's the last 5 who got hired? How do I make that equation? So he says, you know, that's subject to a different question. But he would agree that yes, under those circumstances, that's called an anus. That's a totally different story. Let's turn to source number 4. Source number 4 is the Rambam. Why am I bringing the Rambam in the middle of all this? Just to break up the monotony a little bit, okay? So the Rambam says that when you're dealing with positions of sorority, when you're dealing with positions of exalted status, okay, some positions like being a rabbi, like being the an abesdin, like being a king, okay, a mayor, a governor. There are certain positions that we say these are positions of sorority where you have authority over the community. So he says that when you have a position of sorority, so then there's a totally different consideration, which is that regardless of whether you might have been able to terminate other positions, you can't terminate a sorority position. How do we know you can't terminate a sorority position? Because it says the Rambam that if a person is king, so that kingship goes to his children and his grandchildren. And then the Rambam continues, and he says, last line of the Rambam, it's not only true about being king, that it's good to be king, but it's also good to have any other position of major communal authority. Have a chorus rovos, they pass to one's children and grandchildren forever and ever. Okay? Great thing. So the Rambam doesn't say this, but it's sort of implicit. If the position passes to your children and grandchildren, then at the very least, it can be inferred that it also passes to you, that you get to hold on to the position until the end of your life. So therefore, another argument that people make when they bring cases in Beis Din is, my position was a srora. That even if you want to argue that it could have been terminated otherwise, this is a more exalted type of position. This is better than shisla and umna and tifka. This was an actual srora position, like especially with the cases involving synagogues and rubs of shuls, rabbis of shuls, where we get a fair amount of those types of disputes as well. This is a common assertion. The rabbi saying, how could they buy a me? It's a sorora, right? You know, this sort of, this. I was waiting for my son to take over eventually, but certainly they had no right to get rid of me. So that's another consideration that also has to be dealt with any particular position. Do I say that it's a sorora? So before we go any further in Rav Moshe, just so it should be understood, Rav Moshe is not the unanimous opinion on this, and that's why we have to go to the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish says that I think that you can an employer certainly has the right to terminate an employment with an employee. So then he says, what?
Without cause.
Without cause. So he says, oh, you're going to bring an argument from the Gemara. The Adam of Baba Mitzia, Dav Kuftes, Mikri Dareki, and the Gemara obviously in Baba Basra as well. Mikri Dareki, Vishisla, Tipka, Vumna, Vesapa, Masa, Kulan, Kumusar, Vomdin. Where it sounds like you need to be able to warn them, you need to be able to find that they did something wrong. He says, that's only, this gets back to your point, that's only if that's the minog. If that's the minog, if that's the custom, if the custom is when you hire somebody, you're going to hire them forever, so then you're bound by that minog. So once they have begun a particular undertaking, you can't get rid of them. Unless they can find, you know, another position without any difficulty, which is often not the case. So then we say that if they mess up, so they lose that privilege of being able to be hired forever, but otherwise, now I'm asking Loshiv the Baal HaBayis Nafshei, because the Baal HaBayis did not accept the minhag on condition that they're going to mess up, but otherwise they'll be able to keep them forever. However, absent such a minhag, you're not obligated to keep somebody forever. Okay, Shlomer, and then he adds this other consideration. He says it could also be that it is only in this that it is actually a mitzvah in those cases, meaning that you have the right to terminate anybody. However, in the event that you have a public worker who messes up, then what the Gemara is saying is that you don't just have kind of like this option that you have the right to get rid of them. You would have an option you can get rid of anybody. But in this particular case, you have a mitzvah. It's your duty on behalf of the community that you must get rid of the public functionaries who are not doing a good job. They're held to a more strict standard, to a harsher standard than everybody else because of the significance and the impact and import of their positions. Okay? Good. So the Chazon Ish therefore says that what Rav Moshe infers from the Gemara, you could infer from the Gemara that yes, you would need to have cause. He's not disagreeing with the inference, but he's saying that implicit in the Gemara and the inference from the Gemara is that we're dealing with a situation in which there's a minhag that you are hiring these people forever. But if it's very clear that you're only hiring them for a set period of time, so then the employment would automatically terminate after that set period of time, and you wouldn't have to hire them again. In fact, the Shulchan Aruch seems to really paskin this way. At the end of Siman Nun Gimel, if you look in Aruch Chaim, it talks about different public positions, and he says that whenever there's a minhag that you hire people for a certain number of years, and after those number of years, somebody else takes their place, like a president of a shul, okay? Where there's, obviously they're not getting paid, but if you have, you know, this type of a thing, where in an organization somebody gets hired for 2 years, and it's understood after that 2-year term somebody else is going to be hired president of the United States. It's understood that after 4 years, after 8 years, they're just not going to be able to even run again, and somebody else is going to get hired for that position. So it's not going to create chashad that the person is not reappointed for the position, because everyone knows that the position runs out at a certain point in time. So the halakha really seems to be more consistent with the approach of the Chazon Ish. But in the meantime, Rav Moshe is not done yet. So Rav Moshe starts to... Rav Moshe is talking about like a factory position. Yeah. Something along those lines. So an office position, things of that variety. If this was a position where there was a clear understanding that you have a position that ends at this point in time and then other people to come in and they replace it, that position, especially if it's like a Sarava type position, so it's actually more likely Rav Moshe would agree.
It's like
you can make that right. Exactly. So you can make, you could certainly make that argument. You could certainly make that argument. Now, Rav Moshe now is applying his argument that his basic, you know, approach that he outlined in Siman Ayin Hay in the Poshe Mishpat. Here he's talking about a Malamid. So he says, so he says, once I've established my approach, so without cause, you cannot get rid of anybody. So he says, what if it's a type of position where you reappoint the person every single year? So you're right. You drew a very good distinction. There's a difference between an employment situation where you really could have the same person forever. It's just that you have a new contract every single year, and a situation where you have like a public position of authority where everybody knows that it's only, if it's not like you can hire for 2 years and then the same person can be renewed, like, you know, being a congressman. You can just keep on being re-elected for 2 year terms until you're 100 years old. But it's understood, no, after these 2 years, you're gone and somebody else comes in. So that's probably less problematic, according to Rav Moshe. You say, so therefore, the halakha at the end of Siman Nun Gimel in Shulchan Aruch is not really a contradiction to Rav Moshe. But if I have a position where a person is just, you could have the same person for 100 years, it's just that the contract is not for 100 years, the contract is for 1 year, and after each year, you renew the contract. And maybe you'll decide at a certain point, you don't want to renew the contract with this person anymore. So can you say this is different, because this fits the criteria that Rav Moshe spoke about in Siman Ayin Hay, that it's only Lizman Kotzer. So he says, no. What I meant by Lizman Kotzer is that nobody ever gets rehired after that Zman Kotzer period of time. But if a person could conceivably get rehired, so then he said it doesn't make a difference whether the contract is open-ended or whether the contract gets renewed every single year. So even though it's how you tweak in the nose of a Choshana, Mikiman Shemi Etzem Adin Be'arti Baruch Hashiva Haka Shisoka Pol Stam L'chol Hazman, since fundamentally when you hire somebody, you're hiring them L'chol Hazman Shitzorech Hasoko, for the entire time period that you're going to need somebody serving in that position, you're going to need a secretary, you're going to need a vice president for student affairs to go in the factory, like a factory, b'cheinu b'yeshiva, or a yeshiva, you're going to need the Rebbe, you're going to need a second grade Rebbe, you're going to need a fifth grade Rebbe, shehu b'chol zman sheyiskaymu, so it means that you're hiring the person for as long as that position is going to still be relevant. So you say, oh, we have a minute. We have a minute. What's our minug? Our minug is that we renew the position every single year. So he says, minug shminug. Okay? Shemechad sheneminug v'koshana lochik v'zeh sheminu v'akoshana nah! Ein zeh chokha shakum. The fact that you have new contracts every single year doesn't prove anything. Ki yadua sholiva shesilkum shesalka below taina. Because everybody knows that the way that we function is that you're not going to get rid of somebody, or there is an expectation that a person has when they're hired that they're not going to be fired unless they do something wrong. So therefore, you have no right to get rid of them if they didn't do something wrong, if they didn't underperform. Vim King Shovel Emo, therefore that refutes the argument by its very essence. Uvala Ochaka, and the argument is therefore null and void. And therefore we go back to the essential principle that a person who is hired forever. So you'll say, but look at what the Goyim do. Look at what the Goyim do. In the schools of the non-Jews, they get rid of somebody, even if this would be true. He questions whether it's true. He says, even if it would be true that you would get rid of somebody after their 1 year contract, even when there is no cause, to terminate their position. We have to follow our own minhag. The Moshe creates our own internal minhag. We have our Jewish minhag. We got to follow that minhag as opposed to minhag of Medina. He's not impressed by whatever you might argue is the minhag of Medina in these particular cases. All right. Now take a look at source 7 where Moshe takes it a step further. This is the next tshuva. This is Siman Ayin Zayin. Okay? 4 lines down. Hinei. If you hire a teacher, okay, and the person is doing their job faithfully, he's explaining the Tamid and what he's learning with them, and make sure that they review their learning, and he does not waste their time, and he's God-fearing, you can't get rid of him. Now he adds another wrinkle. He says, and even if at the time in which this Malami was hired, even if they stipulated, they said explicitly, we are stipulating in the contract that we will have the right not to renew your contract next year. They actually say that. They actually provide for this explicit stipulation, Apoloshim Taina, even without any cause, that you're going to be able to be fired, or at least your contract not renewed without any cause whatsoever, and they put that in the contract? Says Ramosha, I'm not sure that works. I'm not sure, though. Here already it's a suffix. He says, I'm not sure that works. He says, there's been more than one case like this. Yesh suffix gadol yukol l'salko. If nay, why is there a suffix gadol? So he says, because those who hire him, they're hiring the teacher, they're hiring the Rebbe according to, based on their status, based as the representatives of the community, right? To hire a Rebbe to teach in a school, and as the communal representatives, they are charged to follow the laws of the Torah. And therefore, since the laws of the Torah require that when you hire somebody, you are hiring them forever, you have no ability to stipulate against the laws of the Torah. It's almost on some level, some sort of a form of masneh mashikosa b'Torah. It's like you're stipulating against that which is explicitly required to by the Torah. Now, manalim nivaru rak lasos kidina Torah shulashem shemayim. The kimen shilasalik lo taina v'adayenu l'shem shemayim emem zekusal zeh. So since to get rid of a Rebbe without cause is not doing l'shem shemayim, so therefore they were not charged. They were not given the authority. This is Oprah virus. They were not given the authority to hire based on conditions that are not going to be in accord with l'shem shemayim. Okay? So now look at the very last paragraph. So now he raises a different issue. He says, but let's say that they want to make the argument that he's not really such a good Rebbe. Let's say they want to make the argument that he's not really discharging his duties in optimal fashion. So here's where tenure really comes into play. All right. So according to Rav Moshe, tenure doesn't really make sense, because from day one that you're hired, you essentially have tenure. So says Rav Moshe, no, there is a concept of tenure insofar as when a person has stuck around for a certain amount of time and they have wanted the person to continue in that position and haven't complained up to now, so then that means that there is a presumption that the person must be doing a good job, and it places a much higher burden of proof upon the employer who would want to terminate the Rebbe at that point in time that they're not doing a sufficiently good job. So that would be kind of like the relevance and the significance of tenure according to Rav Moshe. This was incorporated by Torah Mesorah into its guidelines for a period of time. This very last paragraph of Rav Moshe kind of creates a tenure type of argument. Because up until, you know, the person has this quote-unquote tenure, so then the school could get out of the problem or get out of this impediment that they're only allowed to terminate based on cause by just saying, we don't think you're a good enough Rebbe, and that would be cause. So says Rebbe, says Rav Moshe, at a certain point, the school's not believed to say you're not a good enough Rebbe, okay? Because a person can mess up over time, like a person can get burned out, and they maybe started out as a good Rebbe, and now they're just not so good anymore. And we've seen that type of situation where a school has said, yes, this person is a legendary Rebbe, everybody everybody talks about. They've been there 50 years, but now they're really lousy. They're really not good anymore. We want to get rid of them, or they're not connecting to the students anymore. When we dose it, Pasha Talib is Rizus Sahiras. A person has to be very excited and energetic when they are teaching children. A person might get lazy after a while, but Makura Mubad. But nonetheless, he says after a certain period of time, this Raya Gedolah, there's a presumption of doing a good job. Shemore Tov. Shaya Sham Shana. So what's tenure? So Moshe creates tenure very, very quickly. He says that the person was just there for 1 year, the Kavula owed Shana, and they already hired him for a second year. The Kol Shekein to Shaya Yaitir, and certainly if they hired him for the third year. So that became, I think, the norm for many, many years. It might still be now. But once the teacher is hired already for the third year, that creates what's now referred to as Chazaka. But Moshe doesn't use that terminology, but that's kind of the terminology, because it's three after all. That's the terminology that has set in. He's saying, look, he was hired a second, first time, he was hired a second time, now he's been hired a third time. So this creates what's known as Chazaka, right? So they would no longer be believed just to be able to mouth the words, well, we don't think that he's such a good Rebbe, that would constitute cause, and that would work the first year, maybe even the second year to a certain degree. Once you're in the third year, so that's this idea of tenure that we find as well. So once you reach that threshold, so it becomes a much harder uphill battle, if you follow Moshe's approach, to be able not to renew the contract. And just that very last paragraph on the top of page 3 was talking about your situation. What if Niskatnu, Mispar Talmidim, that they're having financial problems and the number of students are going down and they have to fire people. So there Moshe is saying that's a totally different situation. That's a situation of Anus, where you're going to get rid of certain positions and not renew them with other people. You don't need the position anymore. That obviously you would be allowed to do. That's a totally different story. We're not talking about that at all. Okay, good. So we will continue in Mirza Shem next time. I believe we're on for next week. Next week is the big shindig, you know, inaugural event for this year's learning. But I think there will be time at the end for us to be able to have a session.
What if I hire Rabbi Pershing?
If you hire Rabbi
Pershing, that he's going to be there next year?
No, because if you're hiring them specifically for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, according to Rav Moshe, so then that's not that you're saying for as long as I need you. You're saying this is like I'm hiring somebody to paint my house.
But I'm going
to
need somebody Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur next year.
Okay, so that's it's an open question. Maybe for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur next year, the person will be expected to return. That's a good question. But then if the school says the shul says you only have this Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we don't think that you are quite as good as what we're really looking for. They would have a stronger argument to make that if they didn't rehire the person already for a second or third year, if they had already asked the person three times Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, so then the chazaka already would set in.
So it's not,
you have this type of situation with chazanim all the time. Chazanim tend to be very machmed about these things, though.
Yeah.